And welcome back to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and I'm speaking with author, filmmaker, journalist, and explorer Robert Young Pelton. He's had direct contact with the world's most infamous jihadi, rebel, and insurgent groups. That experience formed part of the basis of his books, License to Kill, Hired Guns and the War on Terror, The World's Most Dangerous Places, and Come Back Alive. He's been advising the top U.S. command in Afghanistan since August of 2008, and he and Ethan Jordan, the former head of CNN, formed an independent intelligence information service for Afghanistan called AFPAX, which, according to the New York Times expose, Pentagon contractors misused as an assassination tool. And now, following that story, today's New York Times reveals does a profile of a former spy with an agenda to operate his own private CIA, Dewey Claridge, which also talks about the fellow that subverted your efforts, AFPAX, Robert Young Pelton, right? What was his name again?
Mike Furlong.
Furlong, Michael D. Furlong, Senior Defense Department civilian from Information War Command in San Antonio, Texas. So where do we stand now on how much we've learned about these kind of cowboys taking over our intelligence, or at least running some parallel operations?
Well, I should be clear that, you know, any business that Eastman and I have is defunct. We no longer do that. And we stopped working for the Four Stars after McChrystal was fired. So that's sort of history. But just to answer your question, there's always been two tracks. There's the official contracting world, in which everything is quasi-transparent. And then there's what special operations and peoples do in the background, and that would include the agency and JSOC and people like that. And that's the covert side of things. But this is unusual, this story with Dewey and Michael Furlong, et cetera, et cetera. It was an attempt to inject a covert activity into a open-source atmospheric program. And you can't mix the two worlds. It's like a third rail in a subway, because you're essentially working in the open with locals to gather information and publishing it, but there's other people running around covertly targeting people for predator programs. So it just didn't work, and it was illegal.
Well, but specifically, you would find out information about who the local Taliban are, and more importantly, what they think, and that's what McChrystal and others wanted to know. They wanted to know who these people are that are fighting them in order I don't necessarily think in order to kill them more effectively, but in order to figure out a way to get out of this mess. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, well, specifically, there was no lethal interest or activity, because we all understood, and I'm talking about General McKiernan and General McChrystal, that we're leaving Afghanistan. It's not our goal to kill everybody there. It's to actually create a workable government and actually integrate a lot of the insurgent elements into the official government. So why do you bother killing people when you're just going to have a dumber, sort of less capable person taking his place, and so on and so forth? So our direct orders were to basically help the U.S. military understand who was who, what was what, and we actually introduced people to the military. You know, we had one-star general sitting down with the Taliban talking about things, just to keep the troops safer and to make our soldiers smarter.
But Dewey Claridge and Furlong decided to use this information that you were providing the top command with to target these Taliban people for assassination.
Correct. And then, you know, Dewey's people approached our people and pitched their wares, and we said point blank, no, we can't work with you. You're spies. You're operating under false pretenses, and you're going to get people killed, not just bad people, but good people, which is exactly what happened. So we stepped away from that, and as we saw, you know, the funds that were intended for us slip away, we saw Dewey's people being funded more and more, and we also saw the backlash of what happens when you get people killed because you're using things like doctors and whatever to target Taliban, and the Taliban turn around and kill those people.
So in terms of the story in on the front page of today's New York Times about Dewey Claridge and to a lesser extent, Furlong, the fellow that that co-opted your operation, and some of the other people around Dewey Claridge. He's got a kind of echo chamber with Fox News via his old comrade, Oliver North.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that's amazing about Dewey Clarage is that he is really behind the two biggest U.S. foreign policy disasters in recent decades, and that is the Iran-Contra disaster and the more recent Niger-Yellowcake disaster, which, of course, the press always focused on the outing of the CIA officer and her husband, the ambassador, without focusing on the fact that the Niger documents themselves were forged. And it's always been my understanding, and I got a warning from Michael Ledeen at the time I reported this many years ago, that they perhaps were behind the forgeries, and he put me on notice to cease and desist. But my understanding is that Dewey Clarage was involved in the forging of these documents.
Well, when you drill down and you look at Chalabi and you look at the events that led up to providing evidence that somehow Saddam Hussein was involved in a WMD program, you have to keep two things in mind. One is that the United Nations and covert operators had been in Iraq for 10 years looking for information, monitoring sites, and suddenly we decided that they were manufacturing WMD. So somebody had to create something. If you start connecting the dots, it becomes very simple to see Clarage's role in that activity. So it's almost like if you were to pick two areas where we were caught with our pants down and logic just didn't prevail, it was the Iran-Contra disaster, and it was also the WMD disaster. And there's a reason why they both seem a little strange, and they all point back to Dewey Clarage's involvement.
And in Dewey Clarage's own memoir in 1977, he talks about trying to engineer a pro-American government in Italy in the late 1970s. So he, as well as Michael Ledeen, have contacts with CISME and CISDE, the Italian intelligence
center. My point is that Rome was sort of the center point for this. And I guess my point is that, you know, I'm fine with covert action and I'm fine with big thinking like create false governments and assassinate people if they're in the service of the American people. But these are two specific examples in which there were huge repercussions to our credibility and to our people overseas. And it's that type of thinking that somehow sneaks in through the back door. So, you know, my involvement was just that I decided that I was going to provide ground information through a subscription service. I wasn't working directly for the military. I was supporting what they were doing through subscription. But people wanted more sort of meteor metrics, which means how many people did you kill? And that leads itself to a whole other disaster.
But isn't there inherent in this kind of these cowboy operations and the fact that the neocons got into bed with these cowboys, is the neocons and the cowboys always share this idea that the State Department and the CIA are a bunch of pussies and that real men are needed to go out there and fight the good fight against the communists or, in this case, against the terrorists, and that they know better? I mean, isn't that their assumption?
It's almost like a testosterone prostate problem. You know, they get very cranky and macho, and bottom line, there's very brave, smart men in both areas, both in the military and the CIA and also in the government. But they work at cross purposes. So you had the agency supporting Pakistan because they fear it as a kind of a rogue nuclear state, and you had people working in Afghanistan trying to prop up a sort of ineffectual government, and they had cross purposes. So these guys that come in and say, you know, we're going to kick some ass, we're going to take these people out, et cetera, they're just sort of short-term solutions that seem like a good idea at the time.
But in Dewey Clarage's case, and it's mentioned in the New York Times today, although not in the detail that I understand that you know, and that is that I spoke recently with David Rohde, who was captured by the Taliban and held for a while, and he escaped on his own. But he Rohde, I think, is the way you pronounce his name.
Yeah, David Rohde.
He and his wife, I spoke to both of them, and they said that they were working with Clarage, and he was promising to get her husband out, but it turned out that her husband got himself out. He just simply climbed over the wall one night and managed to escape. But that didn't stop Clarage from trying to shake down the New York Times for money, right?
Well, first of all, there was a pay dispute between AISC and the New York Times because Clarage insisted that his people had sprung Rhodes by drugging the guards where they kept Rhodes in a medical clinic. You know, I'm still on the fence on that, because how do you magically find a tow rope, and how do your guards magically fall asleep, and how do you end up being taken to a Pakistani military base? So I'm not going to call anybody a liar, but...
Well, he said, but Rhodes said he didn't get, wasn't taken there. He went there in the dark by his, the guy he escaped with.
Rhodes is a professional journalist. He has no reason to make something up. You know, if he was rescued by secret squirrels, that would be even a better one. But you have to remember that during his kidnap, they tried to enforce a media blackout, and they weren't really happy about chatting about his release until, of course, he was able to write his book. So, you know, Dewey was of the same mindset, that he was working in a secret world, but as soon as he got stiffed, he went out and told everybody his version of how David Rhodes got released. And once again, it was fairly credible, because the place that Rhodes was held was a clinic that was known to one of their assets, the exact same place that Bowie Bergdahl was held, which also added credibility to Dewey's people.
And he's an American soldier that's been captured, right?
Yeah, he was captured last spring. And we tracked Bowie Bergdahl all the way from the time he was grabbed until he was sold to Haqqani and dropped off at that clinic. And we were told to wave off. And then, of course, Dewey's people took over, unknowns to us. And unfortunately, Bergdahl's still being held. So my point is that you have various players who insist certain things are true, and there's no way to prove them. But he makes
money out of his own braggadocio, right?
Well, it gets more humorous, because do you remember when Brad Thor, who is a sort of puffy-haired fiction writer, talked about his world exclusive, that Mullah Omar was under house arrest and he had another world exclusive? This was Dewey leaking things through the most bizarre collection of people, not the traditional media, but right-wing bloggers.
Breitbart,
so
among them.
He's a wild card on every facet.
Right. And that was just fiction. The ISI had somehow were holding them. I mean,
well, even if it's true, why would you leak things through a right wing blogger who has no credibility? So I mean, the point is, that's the kind of information that has to be corroborated and sent up to the proper people. But at that time, he was not being employed by the U.S. military, so he had to get in the game somehow.
So again, I'm speaking with Robert Young Pelton, the author of License to Kill, Hired Guns, and The War on Terror, and The World's Most Dangerous Places, and Come Back Alive. And we're talking about the front page story in today's New York Times about Dewey Claridge and his private CIA. And Robert has firsthand involvement with this private spy network who compromised his own open-source intelligence operation in Afghanistan. Now, one of the things that Claridge was trying to do, apparently, was to get DNA on Hamid Karzai to find out whether he was a heroin addict, right?
Well, this once again has echoes of Fidel Castro and the assassination attempts in the 50s. It doesn't matter if Karzai is a heroin addict. He's a lousy president, you know? So
right.
These are the kind of things that take our eye off the ball. You know, he was asked to do a number of things, like make videos, making Karzai look bad. But once again, he's working at counter purposes to the U.S. military, and we have American soldiers working desperately trying to support the Karzai government.
And getting killed as a result.
Yeah, so this is why you can't have these rogue operations running around.
Well, but I spoke with Peter Galbraith, the former number two UN guy there that had a run-in with Karzai and was fired. He said that Karzai, he didn't say he was using drugs. He just said it was common knowledge amongst the diplomatic corps in Kabul that Karzai was erratic, shall we say, and that he thought perhaps he was bipolar. That I don't remember him ever suggesting that he was a heroin addict, although there's certainly an awful lot of heroin around in that country, and Walid's his own brother is supposedly involved in the drug trade.
One of my friends was Karzai's bodyguard for a long time, and I can tell you he's not a drug addict, but he's kind of like the Fredo of the Corleone family. And Wally's like the Sonny. So.
Oh, really?
He's
the guy in Kandahar the CIA had on the payroll for a while.
Right. Wally's the big macho guy that slaps Hamid around, and Hamid's like the Fredo who just can't seem to get things right. So.
Well, and he certainly does seem to have the occasional... emotional breakdown or tantrum. So he's
Yeah.
He's a delicate flower, shall we say.
Exactly.
So the long and the short of it is, though, that is this article going to shut this guy down, do you think? I mean,
no, I think Father Time's going to shut him down. I think he's pushing 80 now. And,
right.
You know, he's been an outlet for a lot of guys. There's an old Zodron network left over from the CIA back in the early 2000s. And there's a group of guys that want to go save the world, but it's getting tougher and tougher for these guys to get in the back door. As you can see, they get outed all the time in the New York Times.
But what about the neocons? They're still around. They've, you know, they're
waiting for round two.
Yeah. I mean, they've got Sarah Palin as their candidate.
They want to go after Iran. The neocons are obsessed with taking down Iran. So we'll see if they do that.
Are they doing that because they are responsible for Iran winning the Iraq War?
It's like a baseball game that they lost.
But do they have any recognition of the fact that their stupidity and their ridiculous Iraq project has made Iran stronger?
No. As a matter of fact, that you can look at Iraq now and say it's a democratic country and blah, blah, blah. They honestly are still fighting the Cold War, and they're waiting to knock down Iran because of the embassy thing. And all I can say is good luck to them, but I don't think it's going to happen.
So do you think that the I mean, I know that the neocons have advising Sarah Palin, but I'm not sure she's presidential material.
There's a constant flow of disinformation that gets injected by the State Department about Iran's threat.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's their nuclear capability or whether it's support of terrorism, et cetera, you know, I've been in meetings where they talk about this as if it's real, and they just won't let up. So.
But Robert, the former head of just retiring head of Mossad in Israel, mm-hmm. said that the Stuxnet virus that clearly the Israelis unleashed on the Iranians has set them back for about 15 years, or at least he said it's 15 years. Their nuclear weapons 15 years away.
Right, but I mean, it still doesn't stop the fact that Iran is a sort of xenophobic Persian Shia enclave, and they feel compressed on both sides by what look like U.S. military bases.
And their behavior in the recent attempts to make a discuss deals with them over their nuclear program indicates that kind of paranoia. But they are putting the squeeze on Afghanistan, aren't they? We're cutting oil supplies.
Absolutely. Well, Iran is very busy in Afghanistan, just like we're very busy there, and they're waiting for us to leave, and then they'll flow money and influence in there. The Afghans are kind of resistant to that Shia infiltration, but they're very busy in Iraq. And once again, the Iraqis are not pro, you know, they're Arabs, they're not pro Shia Persian, but yes, they're very busy over there too. So ultimately, Iran stands to gain more than we do because they're right there. But ultimately, what we have to think about is just like North Korea and just like Syria and some of these other rogue nations, there are other alternatives to reducing the tension and to getting on with things. But constantly banging our fists against them doesn't necessarily generate any benefit on either side.
And having the right hand not know what the far right hand is doing is even more dangerous.
Right. Well, the narrative is the old Cold War narrative. You know, it's we fear them. We don't know who they are. If you watch the Adam Curtis documentaries about how we keep replaying, or the neocons keep replaying the Cold War, it's the exact same thing.
Well, I thank you for joining us. And, I wanted to ask you, I guess we ran out of time here. You were just on the Thai-Burmese border, were you not?
Yeah, I spent a month with the rebels inside Burma. And,
well, why don't we do something maybe next week and talk about that, because I'm interested.
It.
All right. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Bye-bye.
Hello again, I'm Ian Master. Just speaking there with Robert Young Pelton, who is the author of License to Kill, Hired Guns and the War on Terror, and The World's Most Dangerous Places, and Come Back Alive. I would like to also thank Spencer Downing, producer and engineer Devin Jordan. And you can hear this program at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And we also are on Facebook at Ian Masters Media. Bye for now.